So there is one set question which is not, it's not going to be particularly surprising, I don't think, which is, why do you think it's important that Greenham gets remembered by subsequent generations? You can think about it, come back to it later.
It's a piece of history. I can't believe that it isn't in all the history books. I kind of assumed it was until somebody told me that it wasn't particularly, and until I found myself doing a talk at the BBC last year for the centenary of women getting the vote, and I mentioned that I had been at Greenham Common, and the person facilitating it said, "You're going to have to explain to these women what Greenham Common was," and I was really shocked. I thought everybody would learn about it, but they don't.
No, they don't. And actually my experience is exactly that, is that when I mentioned the project to younger women especially, a lot of them never even heard of Greenham
Common.
No. Which feels shocking.
How shocking
to me.
Is that? Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about how you got involved.
Okay, so my role was very much Bristol-based. I was a teacher at the time, and so I couldn't live there all the time. Believe me, I would have done. I decided that I needed to hang on to my job, and also for quite a lot of the time that I was active, I was also pregnant with my first child. So it wasn't really practicable to just take off and, you know, give up the job and go and live there and be pregnant. That didn't seem sensible, really.
Yeah.
So I kind of did the next best thing. Mm. And I mean, Bristol, you know, is full of strong women who want to get active in these things. There was so much support for Greenham in Bristol. And so I would say two or three of us organised the Bristol Greenham Women Support Group. And the group was about 200 strong.
Wow.
So that was just the number of people who turned up to meetings.
God.
But actually far more than that were involved in the whole Greenham effort. And on one occasion, I think it was the Hands Around the Base session, we actually got 51 coaches of women from Bristol up to Greenham, which is considerable.
Yes.
And, you know, and just shows the level of support that there was here.
Yeah.
So we did things like we raised money for the Greenham women. Yeah. Some of us went up almost every weekend.
Yeah.
We did night shifts there because, you know, to give the women a break. I personally spent a lot of time at Green Gate, also Blue Gate, and then at Yellow Gate.
So
we went to different places, met different women, were able to kind of help out, keep the night fires burning and that sort of thing. We went up to accompany women going to court. And to give them support and so on. We also did a lot of lying in the road.
Common theme.
Yes. We used to go out and demonstrate on the motorways, telling people that this is where the missiles would be coming. And I used to carry in my car, in my little 2CV, I used to carry my banner.
Yeah.
And sometimes on my way to work of a morning, a handful of us would go out and wreak havoc on, you know, on the motorway or on one of the roads around Bristol with various slogans that we had.
Yeah.
We also did a demonstration in Bristol where we stopped all the traffic in Bristol until we got moved on. That was a good one. You name it, really, we did it. You know, back in the day, we had a wonderful banner that we used to march behind, and I don't know what's happened to that. You know, somebody made that, and it was glorious.
Yeah.
On the days when we went up to Greenham, when there were loads of us, we would all stop off at Reading Services on the way, and then we would take over both lots of toilets, the men's and the women's, you know. Because there were so many of us, there wasn't anybody to come across, you know.
Couldn't do that. No.
Probably not.
Yeah.
So huge effort actually, yeah. And we made loads of money and gave it. You know, we sponsored various women up there so that they could stay there, and it was that kind of activity really. But I mean, I was just saying to Sarah that I was there when Joan Baez came.
Wow.
And I have photos of that.
Oh gosh.
It was. Now that's a piece of history all on its own.
Yes.
Joan Baez coming to Greenham Common. Got another one somewhere. And what was so extraordinary about that? You got to realise after a while that the women who were there all the time had become really quite swarthy and quite dark skinned. You know, quite. Outdoor living, you know, and then Joan Baez turned up, and look, she had this white roll neck jumper on, and her face looked kind of gorgeous, and she stood out like this hugely clean woman, you know, and everybody else, you know, she was massively warmly welcomed, and I think when you've got Joan Baez turning up, and you know, and we all sang, of course, we sang and sang because we did that all the time.
Yeah.
It was that really did feel like a piece of history. I thought, well, when Joan Baez comes to your protest movement, this really made it, you know.
Yeah.
And that was hugely exciting, and gave the women a real boost.
Yeah, I'm sure it did. One of the things that struck me with everybody I've spoken to is how much. Spin-off's the wrong word, but how much independent action happened, both to support Greenham and also just like additional protests at the same time.
But going on, that's right. So what we had in Bristol, because the idea was that whenever a convoy came out, we would take to the roads and, you know, do our bit to stop them coming out. So what I've got here are the four phone trees. And I know, and then we would person in the middle would ring, you know, the people in the ring around them, and then they would ring those people, and because we didn't have mobile phones, you know, this was the 1980s, and so that was what we did. And you can see we've got hundreds of names on there, people that when I look at it now I still know some of these people. And it was a good system, you know. It was in its own way. It was quite efficient, and it worked. There was the time I slept through a phone call. That wasn't great.
These things happen.
But my phone in my house, my landline, it never stopped ringing that year that I was really heavily involved. It rang and rang and rang. So all evening I would be answering queries from women wanting to know, you know, how to get there or where to go or which gate to go to or when was a good time, all sorts of things like that. And there was so much support in Bristol. It was it really made me proud, actually.
I didn't realise quite the scale of it, actually. I spoke to at least... I will take a photograph of this,
okay.
If that's all right.
Yes.
I spoke to at least one other woman who said that initially, sort of when they first were coming through, CND were not very supportive, and it sort of took a sort of separate women's... I don't know, initiative to get things going and get the support going and go and join. I don't know whether you found that or how you found out about it in the first place.
I don't know how I found out about it in the first place.
The
I just
line.
Kind of took an interest in it,
And again, it feels like there wasn't a lot of central organisation, you know, within the camps. You know, they were often very sort of nebulous, but connected. But the amount of organisation that went on around it and an individual protest is phenomenal, actually.
Yes. But wasn't it interesting the way the different gates had kind of different, almost different functions?
Yes,
you know,
having been at three, do you tell me what they were all like? You can't remember which one was which.
No, I can't. I mean, yellow was the main gate. Yes. I just remember that. Yeah, and that's where most of the action actually took place.
Yeah.
And so if you spent a couple of days at Yellow Gate, you know, you would see horrendous sights. You would see women dropped on their heads, for example, by police. The police were incredibly brutal. I'd never seen anything like it.
Gosh.
You know, I thought the police were there to kind of protect us. Mm-hmm. And turns out, you know, they're not. always. And I think the real thing for me about Greenham was that but it was the police, really, the Metropolitan Police, they couldn't stand that women were standing up to them. They could not bear it. They couldn't tolerate it at all. And so they tried to stamp it out all the time. And one night I was on duty at Yellow Gate, and we had a little bonfire, keep us warm in the night. And then the police turned up, you know, a couple of big bruisers, and with fire extinguishers, and proceeded to sort of, you know, go crazy over putting this little fire out. Loads and loads of fire extinguisher action going on, you know, it was all of that. And I got really narky with them. And the other women said to me, no, don't waste your energy, it's fine, we'll just sit here. Because it was, after all, peaceful protest. And so I shut up and did what I was told. And the police did that. And then they kind of harumphed and went off again.
Yeah.
And then we waited a bit. And then the women just relit the fire. And it always relit.
Really?
Now, you tell me. I don't know how fire extinguishers work.
Gosh.
And I suppose we must have put new wood on it, on the top of it and everything. But that fire never went out. And they repeated that throughout the night. They would come back, do it all over again, because it was driving them nuts that we still had this fire. They'd come back and there it was again, and so this was this little cat and mouse game that they played all night with the women, completely pointless. And the women always won. They always won. Everything they did, they won. They were so creative, and so spirited and so clever.
The amount of stamina it must take, emotional and mental stamina, to continuously stay.
Just keep going through all of that. I mean, it is beggar's belief, really. One day when we were up there, there was this huge waste truck, one of the like refuse vehicles and it was from Bristol, and a load of kind of redneck blokes in it, real kind of cowboy blokes, and they drove this thing at speed through all the women's benders and things, and like if anybody had been in them at that time of day, they would have been killed. And I don't know how people weren't killed and injured, but so that was the other side of what Bristol was doing, was kind of sending up like, yobby, horrible cowboy men having a go at women. And I've remembered that.
Yes, I'm not surprised. It's not.
And I'll tell you a story.
By all means. But it does seem to be a common thing that men are very threatened by women not doing what they're told. I mean, is it as basic as that?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it brings out the worst kind of misogyny in them. Somehow they find that terribly threatening, and especially when it's women en masse. I mean, we find this in all sorts of walks of life, don't we?
Yes, we do.
I think I found it just now.
Yes. Yes, I should imagine you did at council. Absolutely. And then, were there men involved in the support group, or was it women only as well?
No, it was completely women.
Yeah.
And I suppose, when it started out from Wales, and the men took that decision to go because they thought, I'm not sure if this was right or not, that the police would perhaps be less thuggish if the men weren't there. I'd be interested to know whether that actually became true or not.
It's hard to tell, because I think there's a lot of, in all the conversations I've had, there's some feeling that it would have been more violent had there been men there, because of the retaliation and the license to be violent with other men. But equally, it doesn't mean that the women were not recipients of quite brutal behaviour. So it's hard to know objectively. I think it varies with people's experience. And the police, as you witnessed, were
brutal authority. With the women.
Yeah,
they were.
I guess not being fought back means maybe it doesn't escalate. But then I guess passivity can be infuriating to people as well.
I think so. I think they find that absolutely infuriating that you sit there and or that you go limp
It's very disempowering, somebody not reacting to you, actually.
I mean, there were rumours that women were covering themselves in menstrual blood. I never had any evidence of that.
Yes, I've heard that. A friend of mine is married to a soldier who is convinced that they were throwing sanitary towels at soldiers and all sorts of stuff. But I have not heard firsthand from anyone that this was something that actually was going on.
No, I mean, that might have just been a sort of an attempt to...
A literal smear.
Yes, I was going to say smear, and then I thought I wouldn't.
Sorry, I didn't mean to bring the tone down. But yes, you don't know what's propaganda and what's true, I suppose, in other cases.
No, and I mean, fair play to them. It's quite a creative response.
Absolutely.
When you're a bit desperate,
that's
the kind of thing, you would do.
Absolutely. So when you were there at the weekends, did you stay over always?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then we would have to drive back to work on Monday morning. And I remember one Monday, two of us, we just had to pull off the motorway into a sort of side thing and go to sleep because we were so exhausted. We were dangerous. We were going to fall asleep driving.
Oh,
you know,
my gosh.
It was always exhausting at Greenham. Very, very, very tiring. And and I wasn't there full time, so I just amazing to those women that were.
And how did you cope with being pregnant and working full time? Actually.
Yeah, well.
And going away every weekend and protesting. Yeah.
Well, I think it kind of kept me going, really. Mm-hmm. These things do. Yeah. There was so much impetus behind it. It was exciting. It was hugely exciting. I'm going to say that, but it was really, really important. It was important that we won this.
Yeah.
And so we weren't going to give up on it.
And do you feel you did win?
It's a question we ask ourselves. I like to think that we were completely and utterly responsible for those missiles leaving.
I think you can take that one. It's fine. I'm not going to argue with that. Well, it can't have had no impact. It's impossible that it had no impact. It must have done,
and it had impact all across the world, really, didn't it? We were getting messages from women all across the world. We didn't have social media, so it made it more difficult. But and I used to edit the Greenham Common newsletter. So a small group of us would meet at my house and collect together all the available information that people used to send me, articles and things.
Yeah.
And then, you see, we didn't have printing. Honestly, it sounds... I feel like I'm about 100 or something. In the old days, when we didn't have printers and things, so we had to write this stuff by hand and use a Gestetner machine to duplicate it.
Believe it or not, I've used a Gestetner.
Have you used a
Gestetner?
Yes, Gestetner?
They do still
I mean, they're
have
awful,
them in schools.
Aren't they?
Yeah,
do
yeah.
they?
Yes, they do.
Oh,
yeah.
Good grief!
Not all schools. Some schools have still got Gestetner.
Oh God! Yeah. So this Gestetner was in my bedroom, I seem to remember. And
where did you sleep?
Sit next to it. And then we would kind of, get to with this thing. And I can remember, I don't know where I was. Anyway, I was selling them somewhere for 10p with a load of other people who were selling all sorts of other stuff.
Yeah.
And Ken Livingstone came along and he wasn't going to buy anything from anyone. And then he spotted the Greenham Common newsletter and bought one. So that was like a little victory, really. It was like... I've got the only really good thing along here.
Yeah.
This is worth having. So we did that for a while.
Yeah.
And that was all right until there was an argument around censorship. And then...
Yeah.
But it was a problem because you literally couldn't print everything that came your way because we were just a small group of women. We didn't have the time or the resources to keep going, so we just did our best. And then if your article didn't get in, people felt like it had been censored, which was difficult because it would have got probably into the next one. But there were all these kind of there were all these issues that we would always be discussing. So none of this was easy or straightforward.
No, it can't
you know, as women's struggles are not easy and straightforward, and indeed we continue now, you know, having many discussions around a whole variety of issues. And you know, but back in at Greenham, I think things were clarified in that we had a kind of common purpose, really.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems that way. I mean, the organisation kind of fascinates me, that sort of how do you make decisions when there is no clear hierarchy?
Yeah.
And how did you organise a support group? Was it purely whoever wanted to could just do things? Or what, did there end up being a sort of committee process or formalisation?
I think we were pretty good at reaching consensus. Yeah. You know, very good. I mean, it's a lot of people, 200, to reach consensus on things.
Yeah.
But we did it. And somehow, yes, it went, I don't remember it being a difficult thing to organise, actually, at all. I mean, we met in a Quaker meeting place.
Yes.
And they were pleased to have us.
Yes, there seems to be a lot of Quakers involved.
Yeah, there were, actually, that's true. Mm. Yes, that is true, there were. And we were a wonderful mixture of ages and sort of kinds of women. It was a great group, actually, and I thought we all got on pretty well, to be honest. I mean, we did have some fiery arguments as well. Some of us kept in touch with each other. There was a little group of women who, to this day, meet calling themselves the Greenham Support Group, which
lovely.
I love.
Yes, that is
that's
really
right.
Nice.
Some women have died.
Yeah.
You know, so it kind of came to a sad end, really.
Yeah.
But
Do you think there is a sort of time, a natural time frame or a natural size for things? I mean, I guess it's very hard to make sort of permanent organisations.
Well, maybe for that kind of initiative, it would have been really hard to keep going.
Mm.
And I mean, if the missiles were still there, would we still be there? I can't believe 30 years later, you know.
That's the first time someone said that, but actually it's a really good point. That at what point would we have all said
can't, you know, this is not sustainable.
Yeah.
But after it had all gone, I got sent to Greenham Common by my dentist.
Most
bizarre thing. And I was, because I was having a crown fitted or something, and he said, well, I need you to go and get a colour match, and the technical lab is at Greenham Common. And I said, what? He said, yeah, it's at Greenham Common, so could you go there? And I said, yes, of course, I'll go back there, love to.
Oh my gosh.
So I drove there and went straight in at Yellowgate, like no bolt cutters, nothing, just drove in.
There's a technical lab.
Yeah, there's all sorts of things there now.
Gosh.
There were no soldiers there.
No.
Just odd businesses that had set up in this weird place that still had the fencing surrounding it.
Yeah.
But it, you know, but there was nothing else there. No military presence. But outside of the gate was a caravan.
Yeah.
And there were two women still living there.
Gosh. When was that? Roughly, so not exactly.
No, honestly can't remember, but
wow.
It wouldn't have been like ages after Greenham Common, but I think it was a couple of years.
I think there was a presence there up until the mid to late 90s.
Right, well, it must have been some time then, doesn't it? And I did ask about the women in the caravan, and they said, well, we don't think they've got anywhere else to live. Which may have been true, because people did give up their homes, really, to go and live there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's a bit of a desperate place to be.
Yeah, yes.
You know, but I didn't actually see the women. I would have liked to. I would have liked to have talked to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. And seen what they were up to.
And then, of course, we wanted a statue outside the base, and apparently that's... all sorts of things have happened, and then they've been vandalised or never happened or whatever, and that hasn't been possible for some reason, and that's a shame, because that should be marked. It should be marked.
Yeah, absolutely.
In some way.
Yeah.
Well, perhaps we could erect one in Newbury or Reading or somewhere. I wonder what Newbury's probably has. It probably has very mixed feelings about it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it seems to be that it wasn't very welcoming.
No, when I can see,
quite a lot of anti.
I do know somebody who used to let their house be used so the women could go and, you know, have a bath and things like that. But it never went down well with the neighbours. You know, used to get a lot of abuse. Did things like that.
It is amazing the sort of strength of feeling against women just in general in Newbury and the surrounding areas.
Really?
Yes, I spoke to one woman who lived at the camp for a while and said you just got spat at every time you went to town.
Yeah.
You'd come back and your back would be covered in gob.
Oh, which is, God, isn't it disgusting?
It is more than a little bit disgusting, I have to say.
There's us. That's us stopping the traffic in the road with the police.
Wow.
Let me lift up and you can see me. Hang on. That's me, just behind that with my green and banner.
Wow.
Don't I look young? Can you just see my face?
I can see your hair, which is wonderful.
We were blocking Newfoundland Road in Bristol, carrying placards and a banner.
Yeah.
Police were quickly on the scene.
I bet they were.
Yeah.
Do you think women are likely to organise in those sorts of numbers today about anything? Or do you feel we've been a little bit disarmed?
Well, there was that amazing women's march against Trump, wasn't there? Which is the sort of thing where women really do come together.
Yeah, that is true.
You know, how did you, by any chance, see or take part in our extraordinary lantern parade out here?
No, I didn't. I did know that it was happening, but I didn't. I wasn't able to, which is such a shame.
It was quite one of the most wonderful days of my life.
Really?
It was amazing. About 4,000 women.
Really?
Yes.
Was it that many? That's
and
fantastic.
With these huge lanterns and with slogans on and those massive suffragette puppets. Walking, striding around amongst us, and then the 100 girls singing, and the brass band called Burning Brass that we had. You know, it was amazing.
So
women do come together, and they do things, but we haven't had occasion, fortunately, to have to set up camp around a military base. Not for a while now.
No.
but if such a thing were to exist, I think we would all do it again. Sure of that. Definitely
good.
We would.
Good. I hope so. It would be good if we did. I'm glad we're not so terrified as we were back then.
Yes.
Or, you know,
well,
that sort of...
yes, it was frightening times, actually.
Mm.
Very frightening.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Was there a point when the fear lifted, or was that when the Cold War ended?
I don't think it lifted until the Cold War ended. Mm-hmm. I think we're all very frightened again now, though.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite the same way, but, you know, the world's a very dangerous place now. Mm-hmm. And women's rights, if anything, are going backwards.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a lot of work to do.
Yes,
and
does feel like that.
That's what I am doing.
Yes, it is what you are doing. Did it change the course of your life, do you think? You're not a teacher anymore?
No, I haven't been a teacher for a long time.
Was that anything to do with Greenham, or was that just
no.
to do with education?
No, that was all to do with not being allowed to go back to my job as part-time or a job share, because you couldn't, basically, and or at least we could have, but my head wouldn't have countenanced that and didn't, even though there were two of us. So, it's all around women's rights, of course.
Yeah.
But fortunately, I've been able to be involved in women's rights since.
Yeah. So, were you an activist prior to Greenham? Was Greenham at something... Or did it make you an activist?
I've been around a long time. So, when I was at university, what was that? Late 60s, early 70s, was when women's liberation was just beginning. So, yes, I went to all those conferences.
Yeah.
I was involved in all of that. It seems extraordinary, really, that in many ways we're fighting those same battles all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And then as a teacher, I was involved in trying to get school materials to be less sexist.
Yeah.
And so I set up a group within my school called, this went down well, it was called something like the Anti-Sexism Group or something.
Good.
which our head teacher really hated,
yeah,
and tried to stop. But you know, because we used to write all our own materials, we,
yeah,
were actually able to, you know, to have some influence on that. So yeah, I've always been active.
Yeah.
But it was only since for the last 20 years I've been working in I set up a company.
Yeah.
With another woman, and then I was able to do a lot of work in equalities and as much as possible in gender.
Yeah.
So, and then, as you know, I've been in Bristol Women's Voice,
yes,
for 7 years,
yeah,
now, and Bristol Women's Commission for 5 years. We've just,
wow,
celebrated our 5-year,
gosh,
anniversary. So,
yeah,
and that's been a fantastic experience for me.
Yeah. Oh, well done.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
I'm glad you're doing
thank
it.
You for saying that.
It's true. An amazing amount of stuff to be achieved. I was like, no, I suppose the reason I ask those questions is because I guess for some women it was their first experience of activism or of standing, you know, of being involved in what, you know, is overtly political.
Yes.
Action.
Yes.
It sounds like you were already well on the way before Greenham,
well,
came along.
Yeah, but I don't think I'd sort of, I mean, I had joined in demonstrations and done things like that, and I'd been to some very active kind of conferences and things like,
yeah,
that. But it wasn't really until Greenham. I'll probably remember something else in a minute. But I mean, like, you know, things like running a girls' football team, for example, when,
yeah,
I was a teacher, you know, because,
yeah, yeah,
there wasn't any such thing as girls' football and that kind of thing. So,
yeah,
but that's not the same as sitting down in the road. It was only really at Greenham that I sort of totally got into that side of things,
yeah. Yeah.
Because it felt necessary.
Yes.
You know, it wasn't just for fun.
No.
This was serious stuff, really.
Absolutely imperative that,
yes,
people acted in the way they did.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And we couldn't find any other way,
no,
to do it. I mean, it is a bit like the suffragettes, you know,
yes,
who had to resort to kind of,
yeah,
burning places down and,
yeah,
smashing glass and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And I don't suppose for one minute they did it from choice. And look what they went through with, you know, the force feeding and,
yeah,
the brutality from the police, and, you know, and that was for the right to vote.
Mm.
So when things are really, really important, this is what women do, and it's what we have to do.
Do you think there'll be a rehabilitation eventually, like there has been with the suffragettes, in terms of public opinion or standing?
That's a really difficult question.
Mm.
I don't know. I don't know what the public perception of the Greenham women is.
Mm.
You probably just think it was women covered in menstrual blood, you know.
Fortunately, that may be true if they've heard them at all.
Yes.
I think they were either there or disapproving. It,
yes,
seems to,
oh,
be,
oh,
so,
right,
many women were there.
Well, when we used to go there for the very big events, I used to see friends from Southampton and Gloucester and Norfolk, and, you know, it was just truly amazing. It was, felt like everybody,
yeah,
was there,
yeah,
really.
Yeah.
It was extraordinary.
Yeah. And in the group, in the Bristol support group, in terms of supporting women who were up in court, what did that kind of work entail? Was there a lot of...
Well, there were a couple of women who were had some sort of legal background and,
yeah,
were able to actually,
yeah,
offer a bit of legal support. But more than that, really, it was just being there,
yeah,
with them.
Yeah. Were you ever arrested?
I think it felt important,
yeah,
probably, not to be arrested. It didn't,
yeah,
seem very sensible to be arrested.
No.
Generally, it isn't.
No, you can,
you know,
avoid it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's like a badge of honour that you have to...
No, not really.
...you have to wear, I think. Yeah, it's one of those things that might happen, but probably is not something you should be...
Yeah, but, I mean,
do.
It could have happened.
Yeah.
But, you know, it just didn't. And that's because there was strength in numbers. There,
yeah,
were always so many of us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
And so I suppose they would have picked on the ringleaders, really.
Yeah, or who was nearest, I think, sometimes. What were the police like in Bristol when you were protesting here?
Well, they didn't really understand it. They were like, why are you doing this here? This isn't Greenham Common. What's this got to do with you, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, and it was quite a difficult message to get across to people that we should all be caring about this. But as I say, the support from the women in Bristol was phenomenal.
Yeah. Yes, it sounds it.
Mm. So the message was getting out, you know, but maybe only to the women.
Yes.
I don't know.
What were the press like? Did you have many? I mean, I can see you've got some press cuttings.
There's a few press cuttings, but then there's one where we wrote a letter to the press, and all that got in of our letter in the letters page was this tiny little thing that said, Greenham women thank the women of Bristol for... the contribution that they've made and the money they've given them, and that sort of thing. It was like three or four lines, and we'd written a whole letter about Greenham Common. Yeah. The press chose not to report on it. But of course, the minute we took to the streets with our banners and so on, Peace Women blocked the road, you know.
Yeah.
So there we were.